Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Small business owner, you are special among Americans. You are a latter-day pioneer of our society and truly one of America's heroes. Welcome back, heroes. It's 13 after. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I appreciate your business. Our phone number is 888-822-8255, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Stand by, folks, for something really exciting that you're going to be finding out on that, you're going to be seeing on that website real soon, probably this week. Stand by. It's going to be, I'm really excited about what we're going to have for you. Roger Volcom is our guest. He is our good friend and associate editor of management at American University and a private consultant to business and government. He regularly conducts courses, seminars, and workshops on negotiation, mediation, and conflict management, both in North and South America. And he's written many articles on the subject, and he also has an outstanding book that we've been talking about several times for the last few weeks, called The Negotiation Toolkit, How to Get Exactly What You Want in Any Business or Personal Situation. Roger, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. It's good to be back.
It's good to have you. Before we get into our discussion, I have some trivia questions for you.
All right.
On this day in history, the first night football game was played. Eric Lance is my producer. I'm going to get Eric in on this. Eric, I'd like for you and Roger to take a guess. When do you think the first night football game was played? Take a wild guess.
When?
Yeah, when? What year?
I'll say 1924.
Okay. How about you, Eric?
68. 1968? Yeah.
Okay. You're not going to believe this. This is what I love about these trivia questions. You can never believe the year. Just blows you away. 1892.
Wow.
I have no idea how they lit that field, but that's the story. 1892. All right.
This wasn't the year of the Great Chicago Fire.
I don't think so. Hey, Roger, I'll do the jokes on this show. Also on this day in 1951, the first color telecast of a football game was aired. How about that, the first color telecast? 1951, I didn't know that they were even telecasting football games in those days. Also, and this is one I do not understand. I don't know what this is. Henry Robinson opened the first marriage bureau in 1650. What's a marriage bureau? Anyway, he started it all way back then. Roger, let's change the subject. I just had to get those trivia questions out there. You know, you just can't go through life without having a certain amount of trivia in your life.
Exactly.
Negotiation. One of the things that you and I have been talking about in our recent visits off the air has been the concept of impressing or the importance of impressing on people that we negotiate all the time.
Yeah.
And that as we try to work hard to be a better negotiator, and as we become more and more proud of ourselves for being a better negotiator, we start turning some of our newfound skills on the people that we still have to be friends with and expect them to love us the next day.
And this is true, Jim. We've been talking a lot about tactics, and a lot of folks think of tactics as being something you use to gain advantage, personal advantage. And most of our negotiations are with people that we have long-term relationships with. Certainly, our personal negotiations with husbands and wives and children and neighbors, those are long-term. But a lot of business negotiations also with coworkers and supervisors and suppliers and so forth. If you keep using tactics that look out for your best interests and aren't concerned about the other party at all, eventually folks figure it out and develop a reputation and people don't want to negotiate with you. So you really need to pay attention to the first part of that golden rule, which is that nobody's going to negotiate with you unless they believe you can help them or hurt them. And you need to find ways to help the other party. What are some of their needs? What are their problems, concerns, issues? How can you help them achieve their goals and yours at the same time?
Well, one of the terms that I like to use when we're talking about a situation like this, whenever I'm working with my clients and they're negotiating or regardless of what the situation is, if we're talking about people that we're going to have to deal with, or we care what they think of us the next day, regardless of what the issue is, and that is the concept of dealing in good faith.
Yeah.
I you know, I've had people say, well, what does that mean? Well, here's a business example. If you and I agree on something, and we say, okay, this is kind of a point of negotiation, and we agree on that, and we intend for it to be in the documents, and then somehow when the documents are written up, they don't get in the documents. That point doesn't get in the documents, and we sign it, and it's 3 or 4 days later, and one of us comes to the other and says, and I say, John, remember the thing that we agreed on, and it was my deal, but you said you thought that was fine, and you say yes, and I'd say, well, it didn't get in the documents. Now, if you're not dealing in good faith, then you say you should have read the contract. Mm-hmm. But if you're dealing in good faith, you would say, you know, Jim, that was something we agreed on. It should have been in the documents. Let's put it back in.
Right, and that's the sort of thing, particularly for many of your listeners. We're talking small businesses just trying to get started, don't have widespread reputations. You want to build a positive reputation, and whichever way that goes, people are going to talk about it within that closely knit network of suppliers and customers and so forth.
Yeah.
You're going to develop a positive reputation or a negative one.
And there are ways of doing that, John. I'd like to get this out because I want to bring we can't have this discussion without talking about ethics.
Yeah.
And just one example of how you can do this in your everyday life. I returned a television to a store once that was broken within 30 days. Well, when I brought it back, they were going to give me another one. And then when they handed me the television, the lady said, here's your $10. And I said, what $10? And she said, well, that television sells for less now than it did, $10 less now than it did when you bought it, so you get your money back. And I said, lady, I don't want my money. I agreed to buy this television at that price. I just wanted you to fulfill the warranty, which you did. Thank you very much. But that money doesn't belong to me. And you know what? She looked at me like I just landed from Mars or something.
But you feel better about the store for having offered you that, and they feel better about you for having taken that stance.
Well, the thing, I only say that to say that I'd like to. I really encourage people to have more of that kind of ethical attitude about things. Not just let's don't just take advantage of everybody that we can take advantage of. Okay. I want to talk a little bit more about dealing in good faith, and because to me this is something that with your friends, if you're doing something with your friends, and it doesn't have to be about business, it could be about a lot of different things. You could everything that you do, whether you go to which restaurant you meet up for a meal or whatever it might be, dealing in good faith is a very, very important component of becoming a good negotiator. Stand by, Roger. We're going to take a break. Folks, it's 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and our good friend Roger Volkmer is our guest. He's the author of The Negotiation Toolkit. Roger, tell us where your book is available, please.
Jim, it's available in most bookstores. You can get it on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. I think they say it'll be shipped within 24 hours.
Okay, good. And what's the price?
Yeah, I think the price is around $15, 14 and change. So
the book says $17.95, but I'm sure the bookseller's discounted a little bit.
It's been discounted, I think, 20% because it's just on the market.
Yeah, good deal. You know, Roger, I was coming on the break. One of the reasons that I like to talk about these things is there is a whole component, a new component in the marketplace that is made up primarily of people who are middle-aged, probably 30s, 40s, a lot of 40s, maybe some 50s, who have been right-sized, downsized, laid off, fired, canned, sacked, whatever term you want to use, by the millions. And they are they're entering the marketplace on their own for the first time in their life. And in their career, they have been insulated from a lot of the protocols and a lot of the etiquette that is in the marketplace by the business by the company that they've been working for. They really haven't. Many of them have not even had to do any negotiating.
Yeah.
And even if they did, they had the backing of their company, and their company kind of told them how to behave and how to negotiate, and they had to secure the deal for the company. And if something. Not that they didn't have their own personal ethics, but if they had to be a hard negotiator, it was the company's issue.
Exactly.
And so those people are in the marketplace, I think, now with the need to understand how the marketplace, the negotiating ethics and
and protocols that's in the marketplace right now. And that's the reason I think discussions like this are valuable to folks like that.
I think small businesses, in some sense, are defined by their negotiations, not just by the outcomes, but by the kind of relationships they forge with those negotiations.
I recently helped a client with a very difficult situation, and the other party was going to lose something significantly, and they were there wasn't any going to be any negotiations as far as whether they were going to win. I mean, they were going to lose. The question was how bad was it going to be, and so I helped that person to understand that you need to try to give the other party something. Find out what you can give them so that this goes down a little bit better.
Yeah.
And he, I don't think he thought of it as negotiation, but when we got through, you know, I think he realized that it was about a negotiation.
This reminds me of a story, I think it's in the book, of someone who was negotiating an exit from an organization, and she contacted somebody else who'd left the organization a year or so before and asked, you know, how's the boss going to deal with me? And his advice was the following. He said, there's going to be one thing that the boss is going to go to the mat on. And if you give him that, you can have everything else that you want.
Mm-hmm.
She sort of followed the formula
mm-hmm.
and got everything that she wanted.
Yeah.
And she needed to figure out what that was.
Right. Yeah. And you really have to think about the other person of what, if they probably won't tell you, or they might. The chance is that they might tell you. But the thing is what they tell you might not sound like what you think it is. And you got to pay attention to that. You got to watch for those clues.
You got to be listening with your eyes as well as your ears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Let's move over and talk about some more tactics and countermeasures that are in the book. One of the tactics is silence.
Silence. Yes.
Is it golden?
It's a great tactic for you to use, and it's one, of course, you sometimes have to counter. Silence is a useful tactic because the other party then tends to fill the silence with information, and information, again, is the key element in a negotiation. There's actually a combination tactic called bracketing and silence, where you make a statement and then you're silent after, like, how would you like to be driving this automobile this afternoon?
Mm-hmm.
You see what the other party's response is to that.
Mm-hmm. There are a couple of closes that I like to teach people about, where you ask the closing question and then you shut up. I mean, that's the most important component of that close, is shut up. And and what you tell people when you're training them this, and to remember, is the first person who speaks loses.
This is again where you have to, Jim, listen with your eyes as well as your ears. You know, the silence and how the person responds to the silence will tell you a lot.
One of the old ones is the old order bank close, and that's where you just lower your head and start filling out the form and asking them questions.
Mm-hmm.
But what you have to remember is you never look up. If you look up, then you've lost the sale. Stand by, Roger. We're going to take a break. Folks, it's 29 after the hour. We're going to be talking about some more countermeasures, tactics and countermeasures to negotiating, and then we're moving on to how to deal with tough negotiators. Stay with us, please. We are back. It's 33 after. I'm Jim Blassinger, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Our good friend Roger Volkoma is with us. He's our guest this hour. He's the author of The Negotiation Toolkit. I recommend you check that out, folks. If you are someone who's just entered small business, you haven't been in the marketplace all that long, if you are one of these people who, as I said earlier, downsized, right-sized, whatever term you wanted to use, if you're out of a job, you're unemployed, that's the main thing. And this would be a good book for you to get, an excellent book for you to get, actually, to help you to understand some things. If you have not been negotiating, a lot of jobs that you might have been downsized from would not have involved negotiating. Maybe that's a whole area of your newfound chosen field, which is small business, an area that you're deficient in. Check this book out. I know it will help you. Roger, we're talking about some tactics, some negotiation tactics and countermeasures. The next one in your book is called Playing Dumb. This is one that I don't have any problem with. I'm good at this.
I like to do this one too, Jim.
It's just kind of a natural for me.
I like to learn as much as I can about a purchase, a negotiation, and then go into the negotiation face to face pretending that I don't know a lot and asking questions to see what else I can learn. It helps me know how much the other party knows, and I may learn a few other things in the process.
You know, it's also a very good way to just operate in general, and by that I mean the more you and you don't, if you don't like the word dumb, just say that you're going to play the inquisitor, you're going to play the questioner, whatever term you want to use. But isn't this a great way to meet people when you meet someone, instead of telling them all there is to know about you, to just say, tell me about yourself. Oh,
right.
Really? I don't think I've ever met anyone who does that. How does that work? Or whatever. Isn't that, and you know, that's a great way to make people feel really good about you.
And you learn a lot also.
Yeah. And salespeople out there, this is an absolutely fundamental approach to selling. You've heard me on the show and some of our sales experts say this before. The information that you need is not in your head, it's in the other person's head.
Exactly.
And the way to get that information out so you can be successful with that information is to make sure that they are talking. And playing dumb when you're negotiating is the same thing, isn't it?
It is. It's a little bit like silence. But asking questions is often the key, Jim, and asking what are called open-ended questions,
mm-hmm.
not questions that are answered
right.
yes, no, 5, 25.
Right.
But
it has to have one of the interrogatives: who, what, when, where, how, or why.
Yeah.
In front, by the way. Okay, let's move on. Now, this is another one that I typically am really good at: playing crazy.
Playing the crazy.
Playing the crazy.
Yeah. There's a funny story in the book about Muhammad Ali when he was then Cassius Clay and getting ready to fight Sonny Liston, and apparently Sonny Liston had no fears whatsoever. And somehow Cassius Clay Muhammad Ali was able to play the crazy in such a way that his pulse actually shot from a normal around 54 to over 100.
Hmm.
And they thought he was going to explode. And so they had this was at the weigh-in. And then they finally got through this, and they were taking off. They sort of winked at somebody. Somehow he had affected this. And they said later that Muhammad Ali, Cassius Clay, knew that the only person that Sonny Liston would be afraid of would be a crazy man. So
mm-hmm.
he pretended he was a crazy man. I'm afraid we use this one too often. I think we kind of jump to playing the crazy in a retail setting or whatever when we don't get things to go our way. And if the other party does that, then what you need to do is to ask questions. Say, what are you looking for? How can
yeah.
I help you? Try to
mm-hmm.
calm them down and try to ask questions to focus on their needs.
Well, this is one that can backfire on you if you don't know how to do it well. Let's move over and talk about another one called that you call flattery.
Flattery, yes. If the other party is using it, they're telling you how attractive you are, how nice that suit looks. I really love your office and so forth. And it can be a little off-putting if you're ready to sort of jump into a negotiation. And some folks will really keep it on and trying to build a sense of relationship to help you to cause you to sort of give them a special deal, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the way to respond to it is to politely acknowledge it, thanks very much, but then to sort of refocus the discussion on the issues that you're there to talk about.
Well, flattery needs to be given out in cases like this, in negotiation settings. Flattery needs to be used in very small doses.
Yeah.
And do it and move on. And all, it's just a little subtle nudge to your side of the argument.
Let me give you one of the best examples I've ever seen of subtle flattery. I was in a restaurant in Madison, Wisconsin last summer, and this restaurant had a jar there for tips. And on the jar, they had something posted that said, "Why don't you look nice today?"
That's funny. Let's move on and talk about the straw man.
Yeah, the straw man. This is a tactic where you make an issue out to be important when it's really not important to you. You're selling a house, for example, and you've got a washer and a dryer, and you're moving to a new house and you want a new washer and dryer, so you don't really plan to keep these. But when the people that are thinking about buying it ask about the washer and dryer, you say, "Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I need those."
Right. I'm sorry, go ahead, Jeff. Go ahead.
You get the sense that it's really important and you trade it for something of value to you later on.
Right. I also call those throwdowns.
Yeah.
When we come back, folks, we're going to talk about how to deal with tough negotiators. That's right after this break. It's 39 After. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. If you'd like to join us with a question or a comment, 888-822-8255. We are back. It's 44 After. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I appreciate your business. Our phone number is 888-822-8255, and my website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Just remember the name of the show and put the normal stuff on the front and the back. Roger Volcom is our good friend. He is the author of The Negotiation Toolkit, and we've been talking with him this hour about how to become a better negotiator. We're going to move into a section of the book. It's chapter 12 called Dealing with Tough Negotiators. And Roger, before we actually get into that, I just wanted to thank you again for helping me develop this concept of, in the earlier part of the hour, of making sure that people realize that the tougher you become as a negotiator, the better you become as a negotiator. Be sure that you blend in a healthy element of ethics and morality in your negotiations, because if you live and operate in a marketplace or an industry, whether that be in a little bitty town or globally, if you live long enough and if you negotiate without negotiating in good faith, if you negotiate without any ethics or without any morality, eventually you will not be able to find anybody who will do business with you.
I think it's true, Jim. Yeah.
There are people right now that I wouldn't do business with them if they offered me $1 million. I mean, there's no amount of money, really, and people might not believe this, but there's no amount of money that would cause me to do business with them, because I know. In fact, the last time I did business with this one company, I told my employees, I said, I predict that before this project is over, we will finish it, and I'm not going to say we won't get paid anything, but this will wind up in a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I was exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can just predict people like that. You don't want to be predictable like that, folks. You don't want other people to say that about you, because eventually two things will happen. Number one, they either won't do business with you, or it'll cost you an arm and a leg to do it.
Yeah.
It is good to be a tough negotiator. And the trick is, Roger, to learn how to be a tough negotiator and still have people come back and do business with you.
Well, the chapter talks about what do you do when you're facing somebody who's a tough negotiator. And there are actually three different types of tough negotiators that I talk about: a faux toughie, a provoked toughie, and a hardcore toughie. The faux toughie, F-A-U-X, which mm-hmm. is sort of a false toughie, is somebody who has a lot of huff and puff, appears very aggressive, but is actually kind of a marshmallow, a softie mm-hmm. on the inside, the aggressive passive.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the best illustration I can think of character that fits this bill is the Cowardly Lion from the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
You know, all this bravado and so forth, but really kind of a softie on the inside.
And I think that's probably the way my daughter would characterize me.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, talking to you off air, and I think you're a nice guy, a decent guy. If you come across as a toughie, it's probably huff and puff, Jim.
Well, you know, fathers have to do certain, you have to be tough, but she wound up being able to manipulate me, so I think that may be the way she would characterize me.
Well, the toughie is mostly interested in public image. You know, the Cowardly Lion was concerned about how he looked in front of the other animals and beasts of burden and so forth, and so generally if you allow them to maintain that public image and deal with them in different ways in private, it's fine.
Now, we know there is something I think we probably know about a faux toughie. They will have a high level of ethics and morality, probably.
I think so.
And
yeah.
If you don't recognize that, and if you don't correspond with that, if you don't demonstrate, whenever you see opportunities to allow you to demonstrate your ethical nature and your morality, then you should do it, because that will go a long way with a faux toughie, won't it?
I think so. Let me give you a couple other examples. If you remember the MASH TV series, there's Major Margaret Houlihan.
Oh, yeah.
She's a woman in a man's army, so she has to put forth this, I'm going to be tough as the guys and so forth, but really on the inside, she's quote-unquote all woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are a number of other characters, Lou Grant and Ted Baxter from mm-hmm. the Mary Tyler Moore, were a lot of huff and puff, but really kind of gentle beings on the inside.
Yeah. What about the provoked toughie?
The provoked toughie, probably most of us fit into this category. The provoked toughie tends to be reasonable and generally passive. that can become aggressive when a line is crossed, when they're provoked or whatever. The cartoon character that comes closest to this is probably Popeye, the Sailor Man. You know, it's all I can stand. I can't stand no more.
I mean, I remember that. Here comes the spinach.
He's a reasonable guy until you just push him too far.
Yeah.
Schroeder, the Peanuts character that plays the piano.
Yeah.
When Lucy says something about David, pulls the piano out from under him, and he's been provoked. So most of this probably fit into this category. And what you need to do is understand the. What provokes people and not cross those lines. And generally, if you change the tone of your voice and acknowledge their concerns and issues, then they'll be reasonable and you can pursue it.
It might be a good time, might be appropriate to apologize.
Yes, exactly.
You may have done or said something. You may not know it, but if you see someone who may looks like they're about to be provoked, you might want to say, you know, I'm sorry. Obviously, I've said something wrong or whatever.
Exactly.
Have I breached some protocol here? You know, don't you think that a faux toughie can become a provoked toughie?
Sure.
Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I think so.
If you cross over this line of decorum, so to speak, or whatever with this faux toughie, if they're wanting to be, if in other words, I think a faux toughie wants his niceness to come out. He just he just is afraid to until he knows what you're going to do.
Well, I think if you challenge the faux toughie in public, they may become a provoked toughie.
Yeah.
Hey, my public image is my public image, and I got to maintain that.
Absolutely. Stand by, folks. When we come back, we'll talk about a little bit more about the provoked toughie, and then we're going to get into the hardcore toughie. 50 after, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're talking about becoming a better negotiator with our good friend, Roger Volkema. Stay with us, please. The Negotiation Toolkit. It's a book. Roger Volkema. VOLKEMA. Roger Volkema is the author. He's our good friend and our guest this hour. Roger, tell us again where the book is available.
Jim, it's available in most bookstores. It's on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. I think you can get it within 24 hours.
It's a new release, too, isn't it?
It's fairly new, yeah. It just came out within the last month.
Yeah. Okay. You know, one of the things, I want to get into the hardcore toughie in a second, but one of the things, I wanted to go back, I had a thought about the faux toughie, the teddy bear, as you called him.
Right.
One of the things about a teddy bear is that they can go either way. You know, they can be a teddy or they can be a bear.
Right.
And one of the things that I think is important to point out is that when you're dealing with somebody that you either know as a faux toughie or you are you're finding out that he is or she is, how you act, how you behave decides whether they can remain a teddy bear or whether they become a provoked toughie.
Yeah, the faux toughie and the hardcore toughie can appear to be the same
mm-hmm.
when you first meet them. Tough,
yeah.
aggressive, assertive. And
yeah.
And so you have to learn over time or find out something about their personality from others
mm-hmm.
to realize that this is a faux toughie and not a hardcore toughie.
Well, how do we deal with someone who is, in fact, a hardcore toughie?
Well, the faux toughie is somebody who follows sort of an assertive-passive pattern, and the provoked toughie is passive-aggressive. And the hardcore toughie I categorize as aggressive-aggressive. This is your worst nightmare, as they say. This person has to win, needs to win, will win.
Egomaniac, probably.
The worst of cases, you know, they are out there for themselves and nobody else.
It's not. It may not be as much about the deal as it is about whether they won or not, whether
exactly.
they took advantage of you.
And they may not even be that aggressive initially. They may seem cordial and
mm-hmm.
engaging and so forth, and it's a trap. I mean, they are simply trying to get you off guard so they can take advantage of you. It's hard to come up with some specific examples of these cartoon characters. You think about Cat Bert from the comic strip, Dilbert, the
mm-hmm.
HR director.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe villains from James Bond movies and so forth. I mean, these are people that are hardcore stuffies.
Simon Legree.
Pathologic. And the way to deal with them is very difficult. You have to be kind of true to your own style and invite them to explain if they are blowing up. Insist on fair principles and say, look, point out the consequences of what's going to happen if this kind of behavior continues. This is the way I want us to operate, and if we don't operate this way, We're just not going to do business.
One of the ways I think you can identify a faux toughie, a hardcore toughie, is to offer them something that would be easy and smart for them to give you. And if they don't give it to you, then you know that you're dealing with somebody who is probably an egomaniac and probably, therefore, a hardcore toughie. What do you think about that?
I think there's something to that. You probably, if they're truly a hardcore toughie, they're going to have a reputation. So you probably can learn something about them from the circle of friends and colleagues and associates that you've made. They know something of the reputation of these people.
We just got about 20 seconds, but one of the things that I think one of the best ways to deal with a hardcore toughie is to walk away from them.
Exactly.
Get up from the table.
If you don't have a long-term relationship with this party, if you don't have to maintain that, then you have to have what's called a BATNA, a best alternative to a negotiated agreement, and that means negotiating with somebody else walking away.
Yeah.
And if you have that, you'll be much more confident in dealing with a hardcore toughie.
Roger, we're going to talk about this some more in another visit. We've got to go for this hour. Thank you very much for
joining
us. You're
welcome, Jim. Enjoyed it.
Roger Volcom, ladies and gentlemen, the author of The Negotiation Toolkit. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. And remember these 10 two-letter words. If it is to be, it is up to me. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. This program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.